Today and for the next couple of Sundays, the plan is to read from the book of Proverbs, which you find more or less in the middle of the Bible, in the Old Testament, and it's perhaps an overlooked book in the Bible. It's tucked in after the book of Psalms. It's quite an odd book, I think it's fair to say. Very difficult to read through it from beginning to end, because it's really a compilation of lots of little small sayings that aren't obviously related to one another. Little proverbs that affirm or challenge how we live. So here's just a few scattergun examples from the book of Proverbs. Wound from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Or, grey hair is a crown of splendour. It is attained in the way of righteousness. I think I've got a few more grey hairs than I had a month ago. Not quite splendour yet. But the beginning of the book of Proverbs, the opening nine chapters or so, it doesn't launch straight into all those little sayings in Proverbs. Instead, it sort of sets out the case for taking seriously the pursuit of wisdom. And we're going to read from that opening section now. And I've asked Alan Payton if he could read the passage for us that comes from, in fact, the entirety of Proverbs chapter 4.
So, as Tim said, it's Proverbs chapter 4, verses 1 to 27, and it's speaking about getting wisdom. Listen, my sons, to a father's instruction. Pay attention and gain understanding. I give you sound learning, so do not forsake my teaching. For I too was a son to my father, still tender and cherished by my mother. Then he taught me and said to me, take hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you will live. Do not forsake wisdom. Do not forget my words or turn away from them. Do not forsake wisdom and she will protect you. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. Though it costs all you have, get understanding. Cherish her, and she will exalt you. Embrace her, and she will honor you. She will give you a garland to grace your head and present you with a glorious crown. Listen, my son. Accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I instruct you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Hold on to instruction. Do not let it go. Guard it well, for it is your life. Do not set foot on the path of the wicked or walk in the way of evildoers. Avoid it and do not travel on it. Turn from it and go on your way. For they cannot rest until they do evil. They are robbed of sleep till they make someone stumble. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. The path of the righteous is like the morning sun, shining ever brighter than the full light of day. But the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. My son, pay attention to what I say. Turn your ear to my words. Do not let them out of your sight. Keep them within your heart. For they are life to those who find them and health to one's whole body. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk far from your lips. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. Give careful thought to the paths of your feet and be steadfast in all your ways. Do not turn to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil.
Thanks, Alan. God, our Father, there are so many things that we don't get right. So many things we struggle to understand. There are so many obstacles to getting to the heart of things. And so we ask that you would be our help this morning. As we've just sung, Lord of all wisdom, I give you my mind. We ask that you would show us what we need to see and lead us in the way that we need to go. Amen. I think it's pretty obvious to say that there are right and wrong ways of doing things, or better or worse ways of doing things. So there's right and wrong ways to handle raw chicken in a kitchen, or to deal with a red wine stain on a tablecloth. There are better or worse ways to change the nappy of a newborn baby, and it's a costly learning process. There are right or wrong ways to negotiate a roundabout. There are better or worse ways to deal with toothache. And I've tried most of them. They're the ones you get when you Google it. You can chew on cloves, which is very unpleasant and works for about 4 seconds. You can take painkillers. You can try and remove the tooth yourself. Or you can seek the help of a dentist. Or most people's default, just hope that the problem goes away. Now, there's almost nothing that we do or might try to do that cannot be done badly. But thankfully, usually as we journey through life, we can acquire a certain know-how. You know, whether we are learned through trial and error, or someone sits down and tries to show us how to do things well, we can get to that point where we can do things better, where we can do them right. So we cook the chicken without getting food poisoning. We give way to the right at a roundabout. We have our dentist number saved on our phone. And of course, some of these things, even if we did them the wrong way, it doesn't make a lasting difference. Some people have very strong opinions on what is the right way to cook a steak, or the right way to add milk to tea. But those things don't really make a significant difference. But then there's a completely different order of things, where the difference between the right way and the wrong way of doing it, or the better way or the worse way, is hugely significant. So we think of the anxiety that comes with parenting, the better or worse way to raise a child. Or in our relationships, what's the better or worse way, or the right way or the wrong way to relate to someone who is depressed or struggling with anxiety or responding to trauma. There are right and wrong ways to build and maintain trust. There are better or worse ways to use your money, your time, the internet. There are right and wrong ways to lead a country, or to manage a pandemic, or an A&E department. There are some realms of life where we really feel very anxious to get things right rather than wrong, to do things better rather than worse. And so that's a big question. How do we do the things that really matter well? How do we get the things that are most important right? How do we live well in all the dimensions of life, whether at work or at home, whether things are going straightforwardly and as we planned, or whether things are difficult? It's into that kind of questioning that the idea of wisdom comes in. So wisdom's not a technical theory that you could study at university. It's really practical knowledge. If you think of someone who is wise, or a person who's acting wisely in a given situation, it's someone who responds in a way that fits, in a way that works, in a way that ends up with things being better rather than worse, with being right rather than wrong. And the book of Proverbs helps us to see that that practical knowledge, that wisdom that we crave, is not a great secret, it's not accidental, but it is ultimately an echo of God's own wisdom. It's an aspect of the way that God has made things to be. So if we were to look at just two verses, not from Proverbs 4, but from Proverbs chapter 3, gives us a sort of sense of this. It says this: by wisdom, the Lord laid the earth's foundations. By understanding, he set the heavens in place. By his knowledge, the watery depths were divided, and the clouds let drop the dew. So it's by God's wisdom that he's made things to be the way they are. Things have been made in a certain way. And the consequence of that is that our experience of living in the world fits or is hospitable to a certain way of living. And so if we live without any regard to wisdom, if we live without any regard to the practical knowledge of what is right and what is best, the world will seem to be a very frustrating and threatening place. I mean, ultimately, to act wisely is really to cut with the grain, not against it, in the way things have been made by God. So when we make things and do things well, when we act wisely in all the ordinary business of work and family and all the rest of it, in a sense, what we're doing is we are walking in a path that God has established. And so a truly wise person is someone who quite straightforwardly recognizes the way that God has made things to be and acts accordingly. So in practice, when you meet someone who's wise, there's some people in this room that I've got to know and would regard as wise, they seem to have a sense of proportion. They know what matters most, even if there's lots of complexity going on. And if we want to be likewise, if we want to see what matters and do what matters and do it well, I suspect we all do, what we need is wisdom. And so in Proverbs chapter 4, we're presented with that picture of a father who talks about the wisdom they received from their own father and mother. And they're trying to impress that wisdom upon their sons. And in the course of that, they're trying to say to them, look, not just do what I say, but this really is something precious that they're trying to hand on. So again, just to revisit some of these verses, they say, get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or turn away from them. Do not forsake wisdom and she will protect you. Love her and she will watch over you. And then the words that are up on the slide. The beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom. Though it cost you all you have, get understanding. Cherish her, and she will exalt you. Embrace her, and she will honor you. She will give you a garland to grace your head and present you with a glorious crown. So we've got this sense that wisdom is something that is special, something that is to be honored, cherished, embraced. And yet wisdom finds expression in all sorts of very ordinary, practical, commonplace things. What we do with our time, what we do with our money, how we treat people in our homes, how we respond to success or temptation or provocation or suffering, any of these things. And the majority of the book of Proverbs, as I've said, is really a compilation of these little statements that in different ways affirm or challenge our ideas about how we live as humans in the world. And there are so many different topics, and they're scattered throughout: marriage, work, power, friendship, parenting, envy, anger, so on. And yet the picture together is coherent. And there's the sense where this package of learned know-how is being shared and passed on from one generation to the next. As Ellen Davis, one commentator, writes, the sages, so the people who have put these proverbs down on the page, the sages speak with the weight of generations behind them. The present situation, though perhaps new and frightening to the person who confronts it, is analogous to others that have occurred many times in the past. So it's the sense we face the challenge, and although, of course, we can and should learn from our own mistakes, we can actually avoid a lot of pain if we're willing to learn from the lessons that others have learned from their mistakes in the past. This wisdom is not something that we summon up from within. It's something that is received, that we take hold of from others, whether it's the parent or the teacher or whoever. And life, as we know, can throw us curveballs. And I suppose a question that we should all be asking as we think about this is, who is it that's going to help me to hope, to cope with the unexpected challenge or change or disappointment? Who am I learning from about how to deal with responsibility or money or authority or disappointment? Because alongside the way of wisdom that is elevated to this position of importance in the book of Proverbs, there are no shortage of alternative ways that we can go. There's no shortage of mentors who are inviting us, promising us the earth and everything in it. And so in our reading in verses 11 and 12 and then 14 and 16, it sets out those two paths. It says, well, I instruct you in the way of wisdom. I'll lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. And then in the negative, do not set foot on the path of the wicked or walk in the way of evildoers. Avoid it. Don't travel on it. Turn from it and go on your way. And you see, there's this sense where you could be pulled in one of two different directions. And the right and wrong way of doing something, the better or worse way, is rarely a once and for all choice. It'd be much easier if you could just decide once and for all to be a good friend or a good spouse or a good employee or employer or leader or parent or whatever it is. And that would be that, just a fork in the road. The right path or the wrong path. But it's not like that at all, is it? We don't get wisdom once and for all. Instead, we're constantly to pay attention to the good path that God has established for us. And the book of Proverbs is very realistic in not assuming that we do pay attention to what is the good path that is there for us. And in Proverbs chapter 1, we see the whole idea of God's wisdom almost portrayed as a person, as a woman, crying out in the public square and saying, well, how long will you who are simple love your simple ways? How long will mockers delight in mockery and fools hate knowledge? And that's realistic because individually we know this, and collectively certainly we see it. Wisdom is not our default setting. We don't, by instinct, always do what's right or what's best. And sometimes we feel the lack of wisdom in the situation. We see the lack of it in others. And it's perhaps not too far to say sometimes instead of getting wisdom, we run away from it with predictable consequences. You know, you see the child, okay, they rock on their chair. They just kind of kick it back on the back legs again and again and again. And finally they fall and they bash their heads. And the parent says in exasperation, you know, like, how many times have I told you not to do that? And of course, the grown-up version of that tendency can actually be much more messy than a bump on the head. There's that tendency to go a different path. We do not always do what is right or best. Sometimes we do what is wrong and what is ultimately destructive. And so there's this conviction that wisdom is precious and important, that it is a good path, the best path, and that it is a path that is set out by God. And a recognition that we will sometimes stray from it or struggle to find it, or recognize that our starting point is that we departed from it a long time ago, and we're not sure where to go from here. And in a sense, we need forgiveness to address the missteps already taken. But then we also need wisdom as we face the future to avoid simply repeating them. And often when we talk about Jesus, what we are initially drawn to, what seems attractive and compelling, is that sense of, here is someone who offers forgiveness, grace, a new start. And yet we also need to pay attention to the ways in which Jesus is wise and stands and says, follow me, let me show you the best way to go forward. And actually, in every situation when we see Jesus in conversation, he does seem to see what matters, what really matters, and what's really at stake. He seems to know what to do and what to say, even if it's one step removed from what the person standing in front of him seems to be asking for or obviously needing. He seems to know how to relate to the vulnerable person or the complacent person. He knows when to be gentle and when to be firm, when to talk and when to be silent. There's a sense in which Jesus uniquely, whether he's being acclaimed, a crowd are drawn to him to listen, whether he's being accused, whether he's with his friends or his enemies, he never rejects the call of wisdom. And the book of Proverbs, in a sense, calls to us. It hands on to us wisdom. And we're invited to take hold of it for ourselves, to be mentored, to be trained, to be led through some of the minefields of life. And actually, although some of the words and phrases might be strange or unfamiliar, there'll be lots of occasions you might think, well, that sounds very like what Jesus said. And that should not surprise us. Because to know and follow Jesus is to be led into the good paths that God has established. It's not simply to lift Jesus onto a pedestal as a good example. It is to walk with him. And Jesus does call us out, challenges us when we drift and go our own way. And he also dusts us down when we stumble. He mentors us into a way of living that fits with the way that God has made the world in his wisdom. A way of living that doesn't necessarily fit seamlessly with how many are trying to live in the world that God has made. So today we simply have the starting point. Okay, always easy to be a good employee, especially if you have a bad employer. In some situations, it is very hard to know what it will mean or look like to be the good friend in that situation. And most of us will have moments where we think, you know I could and should do some of what I do better. We know that sometimes we are waylaid by things that really don't matter at all. And we look back on something we've said or done and think, well, my instincts there were completely unhelpful. They just pulled me straight towards trouble. We discover that at a certain point, the internet cannot give us all the answers, although there are many things it can teach us and show us. We come to see that the influences around us can sometimes be contradictory and leave us confused. And sometimes the decisions that we make and the consequences that follow leave us fearing that the world that God has made, that we live in, is in fact a hostile place. But we're challenged here, this would be what I want to leave you with, not to despair, but to look for wisdom and to have the confidence that wisdom is there to be found. That there are straight paths, good paths for us to walk on amidst everything else going on around us. Let me read just one more passage from these early chapters in Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 8. And again, here we have wisdom as a woman calling out. And so this is God's wisdom speaking. It says, "Does wisdom not call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? At the highest point along the way, where the paths meet, she takes her stand beside the gate leading into the city. At the entrance, she cries aloud, 'To you, O people, I call out. I raise my voice to all humanity. You who are simple, gain prudence. You who are foolish, set your hearts on it. Listen, for I have trustworthy things to say. I open my lips to speak what is right. My mouth speaks what is true, for my lips detest wickedness. All the words of my mouth are just. None of them is crooked or perverse. To the discerning, all of them are right. They are upright to those who have found knowledge. Choose my instruction instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare with her.'" And I want us to take this passage as a springboard to prayer. And the closing verses of our reading offer almost, the human anatomy. It speaks about eyes and ears, our heart, our mouth, and our feet. And it shows us what wisdom in practice means. And so I've slightly changed the words of this to make it into a prayer that I'm going to say now. But these words come straight from Proverbs 4, 20 to 27. God our Father, we ask that you would turn our ears to your words. Do not let them out of our sight. Keep them within our hearts, for they are life to those who find them and health to one's whole body. Above all else, guard our hearts, for everything we do flows from it. Keep our mouths free from perversity. Keep corrupt talk far from our lips. Let our gaze look straight ahead. Fix our gaze directly before us. Give careful thought to the paths for our feet. Help us to be steadfast in all our ways, not turning to the right or the left. Keep our feet from evil. Through Jesus Christ. Amen.